It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks the future and says, here's a little story I got to tell about three bad podcasters you know so well. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Yep, and today we wanted to talk a little bit about interactive storytelling.
Interactive storytelling. You know what pops into my mind when you say that?
What's that, Joe?
My favorite kind of book, choose your own adventure books.
The best books ever written.
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I would argue
you
with
picked,
that.
You picked the wrong choice, obviously, Lauren. Are you the one who always go through, you know, the safe door and immediately get eaten by a wolf, and then you'd have to go backtrack to where you last left off and then take the other choice?
I usually have like seven fingers in the book whenever I'm reading it so that I can flip between different options.
I was going to say that I knew you were a placeholder.
All right. Well, let's actually explain what a choose your own adventure book is for those few people out there who may not have experienced the true joy of literature.
They're a little older. Some younger people might not recognize
actually
them.
Ryan North just published To Be or Not to Be, That is the Adventure, which is a take on Hamlet that is a choose your own adventure story.
So,
you can play as Ophelia or Polonius.
Oh, I was about to say, if you're playing as Hamlet, I guess you would just have, you know, lots of choices, but you never bother to choose anything.
One thing that's funny we should take note of, we're already using the word play when we're talking about reading a book. And that'll figure in to
that's
what
true.
We're about
that's
to
true.
Talk about.
So choose your own adventure. What is a choose your own adventure book?
A choose your own adventure book is a book where you open up to the first page and it says something like, you know, you get out of bed, your Uncle Ronnie comes in and says, we're going out whale hunting. And you go out on a and then it offers you choices like, do you want to go out on the rickety boat with the whales that want to kill you, or do you want to stay in your bed? And if you choose stay in your bed, like a whale jumps out of your closet and bites your arms off.
Right, or you get dysentery or something.
Yeah.
No, the idea being that you actually turn to whichever page correlates
with
your
choice. It's Rickety Boat, turn to page 76. For Stay in Your Bed, turn to page
102. Right, I didn't actually explain the mechanics. Yeah, that's how it works. And so you keep turning to the page it tells you to make your choice until you die in one way or another.
Or somehow survive.
And come
I don't
to an end.
Think that was possible. I think basically these were books just designed to teach children that no matter what, they're going to die.
Which is why Hamlet is such a terrific adaptation for that
It is a
medium.
Great example of fatalist literature, I will say. No. There were plenty of choose-your-own-adventures that had a positive outcome for you, but they were challenging to arrive at, and often in my case I would end up working backward by finding the positive ending and then just finding out what series of choices would have led you to that, because as you point out, Joe, normally there's like, you know, 70-80% chance that you are going to die depending upon your choices.
Okay, so if I'm an indexer, then you're the system analyst.
Joe,
what was your form of gameplay with choose your own adventure books?
I played by the rules. I don't know what's wrong with y'all.
Well,
you must be
sociopaths. Nothing's wrong with me. I survived, Joe. You're the one who believes that every choice leads to death. So
and you have to admit most of them do.
I encompassed all the choices. I contain multitudes.
Right. You were the multiverse approach.
Yes.
Yes. So you had the parallel universe thing going on.
Okay. So this is interactive storytelling at its most basic form.
Right. So you've got a limited number of choices. It's not like you can introduce new elements that are completely alien to the book. Obviously you are restricted to whatever has been written.
Right. You can think about the plot of the book sort of as a branching tree,
mm-hmm.
where you start at a trunk where, you know, you have one branching decision and that forks into two, and each of those decisions gives you new options, and it keeps branching out until there are many possible endings.
Right, and occasionally those branches will reform into, you know, you might be able to choose one thing in one part of the book or another thing in another part of the book and end up on the same page either way. Some of those, not all of those branches end up being their own distinct pathways, in other words. Sometimes they converge into a pathway again.
Sure.
And this is an interesting way to think about storytelling, because most of the time we talk about storytelling, we're talking about a single linear narrative that's controlled from the top down and told in one way.
Right. And a good story is really, really captivating, right? I mean, mm-hmm. this is a way that we communicate not just entertaining ideas, but also philosophies. Sometimes it's how we tell history. You look at oral history. Those are all told in the form of stories. And it's interesting also, I think that storytelling is one of those things that we use to try and create meaning in the experiences that we accumulate over time. Now, in real life, we don't necessarily have actual beginning, middle, and end to any, you know, series of experiences. They tend to bleed over. It gets really messy. But we like our stories to have a much more contained kind of approach, generally speaking. I mean, there are plenty
here
of novels.
Here in Western culture, yes. And in, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm mostly talking about my own experience, obviously. I don't have a lot of experience with Eastern culture stories, which can be much more abstract.
Yeah,
than
if you guys have ever watched a lot of Japanese film, then you will know that they do not necessarily feel the need to stick to that three-act structure. But it can be a little bit of a culture shock anyway.
So at any rate, when you're talking about interactive storytelling, now we're getting into this idea of the person who is being told the story is actually impacting the story in some way.
Right.
Now,
you're not just passively receiving it,
right.
But you're creating input that
yes.
determines what you get subsequently.
Right. So with the case of the Choose Your Own Adventure book, that's quite limited, obviously.
Yeah.
But it means that you do get a slightly different tale depending upon the choices you make. But there are other examples of interactive storytelling that we have right now, right?
Yeah, we don't even have to look too far into the future. How about video games?
How about them? I love them.
Those are kind of big, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
I love that interactive story about the disembodied yellow head that eats magic pills and then goes after ghosts.
Uh-huh.
I think Cutter S. Thompson wrote it.
I made
that joke in the video.
The thing about video games and interactive storytelling, nobody would question the interactive part. They're obviously interactive. Some people might question storytelling.
Which is ridiculous.
Well,
some video games have more of a story than others.
Sure, sure. Some video games are like Tetris, and while I have a rich fan fiction database of Tetris-related information, I understand most people just see that as a puzzle game. But there are other games that have a very narrow...
Which block is the villain? It's that L-shaped block, isn't it?
But which one? He has a twin.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Oh,
yeah.
Snap.
The
yeah.
clockwise L-shape or the counterclockwise L-shape?
You have to read to find out, Joe. I'm not going to spoil it for you. But anyway, there are other video games that actually do have a narrative involved from the beginning all the way through to the end. Now, you could argue that video games can be as restricted as a choose-your-own-adventure book for in some cases. And in some cases, it may be more so, right? There may be only one story you get from beginning to end, and as you play the game, you unlock the next element of that story. So, you know, you might continue through a game. I think The Last of Us is a good example of this. The Last of Us, we're not going to spoil anything.
But
thank you. The Last of Us is a survival horror game, and it's extremely well written, I would say. The characters are very well realized. There's a huge emotional impact. But you don't actually affect the story that much depending upon your choices. You do have some choice in the game, but it doesn't, I think, change how the ending is going to play out.
Right,
whereas
sure.
There are other games where, depending upon your choices, you'll get one of a series of endings.
Mm-hmm. Like Silent Hill 2, which I don't think either of you guys have played.
No.
But again, a horror survival video game in which there's a bad ending and then a really bad ending and then a kind of thing. And so, but which one of those you get depends upon a lot of kind of non-traditional video game elements of what you as a character were thinking about by looking at during the game. Like, what you paid attention to ends up becoming the result of the storyline.
That's interesting.
Which is one of the reasons why that's kind of called out as being like, hey, that was a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, there are most of the video games I'm familiar with, it's far more overt. It's one of those things where a character says, do we do A or do we do B? And at that point, you're thinking, this is going to affect everything from this point forward.
I better save first.
I'm going on a wiki to see what. Okay, I'm totally the spoiler guy. I'll be like, okay, I got to find out if I choose to let this person die, is that really going to haunt me later? I'm that guy. I wish I weren't that guy.
No, again, I just save my game. I'm just realizing, this is why I have 98 game saves, as many as possible. I'm still
doing
indexing.
You're doing your what's it, choose your own adventure, CYOA?
Sure,
your CYOA strategy on the video games.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
And whereas I can't do that with my strategy for choose your own adventure.
Well, you're doing it exactly.
You're looking it up and working backwards.
Right, but I'm looking at the next step. I don't look at the very end of the game and do it all the way backwards.
Well, I play by the rules and I just make my decision and see what happens.
See, that's the thing. Obviously, we all know what would happen if we all had time travel devices at this point. Joe wouldn't use his. I would constantly be going ahead thinking, nope, don't want to make that choice. Go back and try another one. And Lauren would just be doing the multiverse approach.
I would have a terrific library of everything that could possibly happen.
Wow.
That's horrifying.
This is
it's really interesting, though, because we're actually seeing more about our psyches here. We're learning about each other.
Which is the terrific thing about storytelling. This, folks, is why, in a minor tangent that I'm not sure how is going to connect to our next point, is I think, the heart of storytelling. This is why finding stuff out about ourselves and how, you know, the way that we consume stories clearly has a lot to do with who we are. And the creation of stories is the same thing. It's all about the human experience.
Sure, sure. And so, you know, Joe, you had a point here in our outline that we're looking at. I mean, you brought up the point about video games, while they are becoming a very powerful storytelling medium, they're not necessarily viewed that way by the larger public.
Yeah, well, and there might be good reasons for that.
Sure.
I want to float a few ideas in that I agree with you that I played The Last of Us, and I thought that was just a beautiful game. It had really good writing, good dialogue, strong characters, emotional depth. I felt things about what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's real. I mean, I can totally acknowledge that. But at the same time, there is something I think kind of inherently different between the way we play most games, even those games that do have strong storytelling, and the way we experience, say, a novel or a movie, where a novel or a movie has a plot that executes and you're following it and you're thinking about it and you're engaging with it in that way. But games typically have a different kind of mechanic. Like, as you progress through the story of a game, even like The Last of Us, one with good writing, there are these mechanics. There's competitive action.
Mm-hmm.
There's repetitive action. It's very task oriented. You know,
sure.
You have a goal you're trying to achieve. Usually they're trying to create a sense of flow by having you do these actions over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of thing doesn't really, as far as I can tell, have a role in traditional storytelling.
Right, unless you're watching something like Pirates of the Caribbean, where they go to the same set pieces 18 times in a row because they hadn't finished writing the script before they started shooting the movie. But that's a rant for another time.
Well, not all video games necessarily have that puzzle or repetitive task play element to them. And usually those are the ones that gamers wind up not being too fond of. They come in with bad reviews. For example, the entire Final Fantasy series after, say, 10, depending on who you talk to, someone's going to say, like, that was just an interactive movie. That was completely crap.
I have heard this term, interactive movie. How is this different than just, say, like, a game with good graphics?
So back when Laserdiscs, if we can come back to Laserdiscs, I don't personally have much experience with those. But,
I do. Let's go ahead. Go ahead. I'll chime in if I need to.
I once watched a Laserdisc of Congo.
Oh, my goodness.
Shun.
When people started finding out, or when the technology kind of allowed people to create chaptered stories mm-hmm. within a visual digital medium,
mm-hmm.
That's when some storytellers started thinking, like, hey, this is cool. I can create a sort of choose-your-own-adventure within this digital medium, and that's terrific. There were a few games that I think people considered good ones that had a interactive element combined with full motion video that people didn't hate.
They're very few and far between. Full motion video. The problem with full motion video was that once we learned how we could do it in a storage medium that wasn't going to take up a car's worth of space, everyone put it into everything. There was a short. And the reason why it was short is because it was so awful. There was a short era in video games, computer games in particular.
In the early 90s.
Yeah, where full motion video was in everything from Myst to Zork to, you know, all sorts of games that never needed it before. And then in many cases, it was used purely as a gimmick because they had the ability to do this. And it was not executed in a way that benefited the game that was anything that a player would really welcome. It was mostly seen as a distraction and sometimes just as really embarrassing. So it was not that it was a bad tool. I just think it was poorly applied in those early days. And that kind of ended up making a dark mark against that style of video games from forward.
When I said full motion video just then, Jonathan developed this sudden eye twitch that was pretty,
okay,
pretty telling.
So let me tell you sometime about the Tim Curry game where you play as Frankenstein's monster and Tim Curry is Frankenstein. At one point he refers to your face looking like, and I quote, pork butt.
Not Frankenfurter, just to be clear.
Frankenstein.
Okay, that's
but
cool.
It has Tim Curry in it, so that sounds beautiful. You know what else has
Tim
Curry in it?
I'll show you the YouTube video. What?
Congo.
Okay, I'm glad we brought it full circle. Getting back to the interactive movies thing, what you mentioned with Laserdisc, the first thing that pops into my mind is one of the earliest Laserdisc-based arcade games, which was Dragon's Lair.
Right, yeah, and I think that is basically the only thing that critics and gamers agree was not awful.
The animation was nice. The story was very basic and some would argue heavily misogynist, but it was the story of, you know, you're playing the character of the heroic knight who's trying to rescue the damsel in distress who's been captured by a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
But really that gameplay was very limited. Essentially, it meant that when the screen flashed, you were supposed to either move the joystick in one of four directions or you pressed the sword button. And you had to learn the sequence by just playing it over and over and over again to learn which way you were supposed to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, depending upon which version of the game you played, in some it would flash in a way that would indicate what you were supposed to do. But more often than not, the versions I saw was just screen would flash, you had to figure it out, and it was trial and error. So it wasn't the most satisfying of game elements.
So you were saying people liked this? I thought people did not like this game.
People enjoyed... Well, I remember I was alive when this game was in arcades, all right? So I remember going to arcades and seeing a huge line or a group around. In fact, this was an arcade game that was so popular that many cabinets had two screens.
Oh, wow.
They had a screen mounted on top of the first screen so you could stand further back and see what was going on by looking at the top screen because everyone was crowded around the bottom one. So it was popular because the animation style was so fluid and different from everything else we were used to in arcades. However, when it came to the gameplay elements, people were not necessarily so enthralled, but they did want to see how the story ends.
Okay, but so that brings me back to the question, sure, it's interactive, but is it really storytelling? Or is it, I mean, in beyond the most basic sense, is it good storytelling?
Well, I think it was such a gimmick that, you know, people were so excited about the technology that they were like, let's use this technology and not let's use this technology to create a story that makes sense or to incorporate gameplay that's not frustrating. Or, you know, I was a huge Crazy X-Files fan when I was in middle school or high school around the same time that this was going on. Sorry, Jonathan. And so I owned the like 8-disc X-Files video game that came out at some point that incorporated full motion video and was basically so terrible. Like the gameplay itself was so terrible that I stopped because I couldn't, like, it was so glitchy that I just could not physically do what the game wanted me to do.
The challenges of creating a truly compelling interactive storytelling experience, if you're going to gamify it, is that you have to create a game that works and you have to create a compelling story.
Yeah.
It's two big challenges. So you could go the Last of Us route where you have a very compelling story with good gameplay, but it also is, you know, when you look at it, when you look
it's
at very the actual
linear.
Yeah, and the player has very little impact on how that story actually plays out, assuming that you are successful in what you do. Right? I mean, you get to see, every time you die, you get to see a different way that you died, but for successfully completing the game, you get one outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are other games, of course, that depending upon what you do, you will get different outcomes. Like the Fallout series, you get very different outcomes depending upon the choices you make in the course of the game. So that gives the player a sense that the player is actually contributing to the story, not just consuming the story. So when we're really talking about interactive storytelling in the future of it, we're talking about maybe some sort of, not necessarily a video game, but that's one of the easiest formats we can talk about, but some form of entertainment where the person who is consuming it is also contributing to it in a meaningful way.
Right. Basically, we want to look at the term and think that it's really robust in both of these words. It's really interactive in a strong way, and it's really good storytelling.
Right.
And we really haven't, in my view, come across something yet that's really strongly both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would say that some LARPers, some live action role players would argue with that. And say that, you know, I'm not saying this is a personal eye, but I know many people who would argue that they have played live action role playing games in which their characters have been able to help create the storyline and change the storyline as
sure.
It developed.
Right. Role-playing games in general, live-action role-playing games in particular, these are forms of entertainment where, depending upon who is running the game, you may be able to impact the actual story in a really meaningful way. As in, let's say a player is playing a character, and that character makes a choice that is completely within the realms of that game. It makes sense for the character. It makes sense within the context of the rules, etc. And the game master or masters, the people who are running the game, had no way of predicting that this was,
they didn't
think about it, but it makes perfect sense. If they're good and they're flexible, they can incorporate that and even make that into something that builds onto future games where the things that, you know, they might even scrap plans that they had for the next 3 or 4 sessions saying, you know, what we had was really good and maybe we can still use it in the future, but this is too
good to lose.
Let's continue this and see where this goes. And in that case, it does become a collaborative storytelling experience. From my own personal experience, besides the role-playing game, the example I gave earlier was the idea of improv games, where you have improvisers on stage who are, it goes beyond the improv games that you've seen where it's, you know, trying to go through the alphabet letter at a time in every sentence. More like it's 2 or 3 improvisers who are trying to create a scene that has a narrative arc of some sort. And in fact, there are terms that any person who's taken improv would be able to rattle off. Things like the platform, which is your basic premise. The tilt, which is where you introduce some form of conflict. The resolution, which may or may not be a happy resolution. Often, it's a comically unhappy resolution. But this is a form of collaborative storytelling where there was nothing before, except maybe a suggestion from the audience.
And I want to offer a slight qualification to that. While I see what you're saying, definitely, pretty much all of the improv I've seen was played for short-term comedic effect. Like, it may have been a lot of fun to watch, but they create a funny scene, but it doesn't really have, like, a strong narrative arc.
It's
in a
fleeting.
Way
it's not like someone's going to record that and hold it up as high literature next to...
Sure, I don't think a good story and high literature are necessarily the same thing. In fact, I would argue that a lot of high literature, to me, lacks what I would consider a good story. And I think that a lot of good stories don't necessarily qualify as high literature. But I will say, I agree there's a lot of the improv I've seen is really, let's try and make the audience laugh as loudly and frequently as possible, and it may just mean introducing bizarre characters in an unlikely setting. But there are other forms. There's long-form improv, which is designed to last over the course of
a theater season, perhaps.
Right, an entire season of shows where things that characters do carry over from one quote-unquote episode to the next.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Oh, yeah. I'll hook you up. So there's a local theater here in Atlanta that does that occasionally, where they'll do an improvised soap opera, and every episode is the next episode of the soap opera. So decisions that characters make in previous episodes carry over. And so you really do have a collaborative storytelling. Now, you know, your quality of story depends heavily on the quality of the storytellers.
Yeah, and also in those situations, there's probably, I would guess, a limited role of interactivity for the audience. Like, they might contribute, you know, word or something.
In the case of the soap opera one, the audience is merely an audience. So the interaction is really going on amongst a small group of storytellers, not the storytellers and the intended audience.
So, that's a different kind of interactive storytelling. The idea of collaborative storytelling.
Right.
Also interesting.
Yes. Yes, it's not, obviously if we were to do a truly interactive, collaborative story in that mode, and you were to open it up to the entire audience, it would be very difficult to manage very, very quickly.
Well, it'd be more like LARPing, I guess, right?
Well, sure, hypothetically. I mean, you still got similarly a small group of controllers and a large group of people who have a pretty, pretty limited input on what's going on. But yeah, I think it's interesting that all of these examples that we're coming up with of widely collaborative storytelling are very, very physical, very non-technical.
Exactly.
Sure. Well, creating the technology is not necessarily the problem. And, Joe, you linked to a great article for us to read, the Gama Sutra article by Ernest Adams, which was all about designing interactive stories and doing interactive storytelling. And Adams points out that there are a lot of considerations you have to take into account before you try and create some sort of, in his case, he's talking mostly about video games, but it doesn't have to necessarily be a game, but an interactive story session. For example, if you were just to create an open world environment and then give players free rein to do whatever they want and gave them no input whatsoever as to what is important or not important, you might not see very much happen, or
it might not be a story particularly.
Yeah, it may just be chaos. There might not be enough there to drive players to do anything beyond whatever basic capabilities they have because of the game.
Yeah, a story is more than just behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a story implies some kind of significance or meaning, that things have a cumulative meaningfulness, I guess, from beginning to end.
And there's some form of persistence there that something that happens matters for things that follow, right? Otherwise, you just have things happening and there's no connectivity.
Yeah. You want an arc and a climax
and resolution. Yeah. These are things that are the basics of storytelling, but anyone who has tried their hand at storytelling can tell you they're not necessarily easy to master. I mean, that's why there's so few really fantastic storytellers out there. you know, there are plenty of people who like to tell a story, and you probably know a few who are good at telling really entertaining ones. But someone who really like transcends that and becomes the person who is known as the storyteller, that's a tough skill to master.
Just take a fiction writing workshop sometime to see how hard it is to create a good story.
Right.
I mean, even if you are the only person working on it and there's nobody else there to get in your way and mess up what you're trying to do, it's still really hard to write a good story.
Sure.
When you're introducing the random variables of massive collaboration or the interactivity with even just one audience member or player at a time, you're introducing so many variables and all of the possibilities of the ways your story could not go well.
Yeah.
Just balloon. It just goes huge.
Yeah.
There's also a problem with the writer's ego, I think, wherein sharing something that you have created can get really, really internally messy for you. Like, cause, you know, it's you probably have an idea of where you want that idea to go. And if the next person down the line doesn't take it in that direction, it can be frustrating.
This is something that it becomes clear in some of the previous examples we talked about, like role-playing games. So role-playing games, the way that Lauren was talking about them, the way I was talking about them earlier, if you have a game master who is not flexible, it doesn't mean that they're necessarily bad. They just can't handle these diversions from a plot that they have in mind, whether it's a pre-bought module of an adventure or it's something that they have written up themselves. And you can tell these kind of game masters because they will steer players back onto the right course, or they'll just deny the players outright from being able to do things.
Right. It's the kind of thing like, well, I want to open that door. You can't open that door. I open it anyway. You die.
Right. Or it's just like, nope, door's gone. What? Like, yeah, this is what happens when you give me
the door
limitless power.
It was actually a gelatinous cube.
Right.
Your arm sinks into it.
Oh, nice, Joe. So you have played. All right. So, but yeah, these are examples of how storytelling and collaborative storytelling is such a challenging thing because it involves sharing control of the story. It involves listening. It involves reacting. It involves building. It involves persistence. It involves trying to create a narrative arc of some sort, especially if we're talking about the Western tradition of storytelling. These are all very tricky things to incorporate in a way where a lot of people can participate simultaneously.
I want to talk about one idea I had that I thought would be an interesting way to approach interactive storytelling, which would be to take the sort of open world gaming approach that you see in games like Grand Theft Auto or something, where if you haven't played these games, they don't have a linear storyline where you have to go certain places and do things in a certain order, really.
Necessarily.
Well, at certain points they might.
Yeah.
But generally, you're free to roam.
Right.
You can go all over the place, and you can do things in whatever order you want. You can look wherever you want to look. I wonder if there's a future where people might create movies that are like this, meaning they're interactive not so much in that the audience can change what's happening, but the audience is free to roam sort of throughout the movie. So if the audience member doesn't like following a certain character as the protagonist, the audience member could select a different character and to see the same story, but I'm more interested in following this character instead of that one.
So let's say it's a heist movie.
Yeah, that's the example I used in the script.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you could follow either one of the potential criminals, or you could follow the person upon whom the heist is going to be committed, or you could follow the law enforcement that is trying to respond to and counteract this. Or, you know, obviously this would make creating any sort of film much more complicated. It would get more complicated as you added characters because mm-hmm. you'd have to have an entire story told from that person's point of view, at least from the point when they come into the story to the point where they leave, so that you would be able to allow people to jump from one to the other. There's nothing that says we couldn't do that. It would require a lot more work, and I would imagine this would be something, I hesitate to use the word easier, but I can imagine this being something more likely to be seen in a computer-generated movie as opposed to we're shooting live actors, which would just mean we have to shoot the same scene from like 8 different points of view.
Although I would argue that many movies are already being shot from 8 different points of view, and that the technical work of rendering a scene out is just as expensive almost as filming the actors that many times.
I would imagine so. It's a lot easier to work with camera placement in a 3D.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Like a computer-generated environment.
Yeah, another aspect of this potential open-world movie would be, so instead of following different characters, what if you could interact with different localities? So let's say I want to park the camera right here. Maybe it's a movie that's like a disaster movie. You know, here's the day that aliens attack New York City.
I thought you said it was a disaster movie.
Dis.
Nice. So here's the day.
Sorry, New York.
Here's the day aliens attack Jonathan Strickland's house.
That would be a disaster.
And you can park the camera in lots of different. So maybe
like my living room,
one way,
guest room.
And one way you're looking at what's going on inside the house. Another way you're looking at what's going on in this place. You know, as the police gather outside and do not help Jonathan.
That's fair. I'm on several lists.
My original example worked better. If it was citywide, you could focus on lots of different places,
right,
and
you
see
could
what
Queens,
was happening.
You could be the Bronx.
I totally want an interactive movie that you can switch directorial styles. Like this is aliens attack Jonathan's house by way of Hitchcock, and then
I would want
switch
Quentin
it over
Tarantino,
to
because
Quentin
then you would
Tarantino
never
and...
be able to tell when things were happening. Like, is this before the alien attack or after the alien attack? What's with the gimp? Yeah.
Here's my question.
Okay, go for it.
So all of this is interesting to talk about, but will it ever really catch on? Because I feel like interactive storytelling has not caught on in a mainstream way, except unless you include gaming, and even that's not necessarily mainstream.
I think it's more mainstream now than it has been in the past. For one thing, the video game population has grown up with video games, and mm-hmm. so it's become more of a mainstream thing.
Let's table video games for
sure.
a minute and just talk about these other types of interactive storytelling.
I would imagine that for the most part, if we were to talk about some sort of movie experience, for example, where you would go to a movie theater, let's just do this kind of thing. You go to a movie theater and everyone has a little controller.
A, B button.
Yeah, where they can make choices throughout the film, and then the film goes with whatever the majority rule is.
Oh, that'd be so annoying.
See, that's the thing. I can imagine that happening. Like, I could also imagine after every choice you hear like half the audience go, "Oh, come on!"
Yeah.
But anyway, I can imagine it happening. In fact, it has happened. There are films that have tried this sort of thing.
I think they were massively unpopular.
That's the thing, is that it's such a gimmick, right? Even if you were to do it really, really well, I can't imagine that being something that would be the norm. I could imagine it being once in a while you'd hear, especially if some well-known filmmaker took it upon him or herself to create this kind of film, that might make big news and be popular for a while. But
yeah, well, I think that having a personal experience of that rather than a group experience would be better. I mean, you know, if I was sitting there with my own personal headset and going through a movie with an A/B option, that would be fine.
I think it'd be fun if it were on online, and then you could, and there are video games that are like this, they're online video games where you could make your choices. And then not only would it play out, but at the end of the movie, it would tell you how many other people made the same choice you made. So in other words, you could find out, did you make the same choice that the majority of the audience did? Did you take the path less traveled?
Did you eat the marshmallow? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you take the red pill or the blue pill?
Yeah.
Did you deny the existence of the Matrix sequels, or did you embrace them like the person who is wrong?
But yeah, I think that part of the problem with all of this right now is that the technology is still kind of clumsy, and that as the technology improves, maybe it'll get more popular, but I don't know. I mean, at the same time, you know, if you take the current functional working examples of things like improv and LARPing, not that many people LARP. Other nerds look down on LARPers. I don't like talking about my limited LARP experience in public because people go, "Oh,
never mind. I was going to make a joke, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to back away."
Wait, you're actually one of those people?
Here's the thing. I agree that it's a niche thing. I think that even if, like the technology, I'm not so concerned about. I think the technology could be, we could do it right now.
Yeah,
the problem is writing a good story to have it work.
The technological problem is not a hardware problem. It's a design problem.
Agreed.
Right. Right. And also what are people looking to get out of a story? Do most people want to do the work that it takes to participate in an interactive story?
Right. That's also a good question. I mean, I think for some people, it would be a curiosity that they would be willing to try out once. But, you know, would that ever translate into something that's truly successful if you were to compare it to, say, other traditional films? I don't know. Maybe it would mean if you wrote a really good one and you had lots of different choices and they were different enough so that the film was a satisfying experience no matter which series of choices were made, maybe you'd have like the next big enormous blockbuster on your hands as everyone goes again and again in order to see what the other outcome would be. Like, all right, everybody, I already seen what happens if you hit A, everybody hit B. And then you find out, you know, when you punch the guy, the movie gets twice as awesome. So, you'd have to have someone really good at creating a story to develop that. And even then, like we said, it's just going back to that video game model where the interaction is still limited. You're given a couple of choices and it does impact the way the story unfolds, but ultimately you're not creating the story.
Yeah. And with like the open world movie idea I was talking about before, it's not that we lack the technology to make that either, but what we said, I think you said it, Lauren, correctly, is that, you know, you would have to take like 200 hours of footage or something, or even
sure.
more.
You know, well, I mean, it's just think of it as just like a simulation of real life. You know, you could go and sit down on a park bench, and on one day you might see the most amusing series of characters walk by and overhear conversations and think it's fantastic. And maybe you even see something that is well outside the norm. Maybe there's like a police chase or something that goes by. You get something really exciting. And then the other day on the next day on the same park bench, you sit down and it's just, you know, just a quiet, normal day. It's same sort of thing could happen in one of these, you know, these environments, unless you were to engineer things to happen so that everyone remains, I'm going to use a word you love, Joe, engaged consistently over time. You know, this is, I love this conversation. It's a great one. I love this idea of interactive storytelling, and there's so much more we could talk about, but we really need to wrap this up. Guys, for those of you out there who are storytellers or who just love a really good story, weigh in on this. Come over to fwthinking.com. Let us know what you think. Tell us if you've got an experience in a collaborative story. Maybe we didn't even talk about, you know, some of the traditional approaches like round robin storytelling, where a person starts writing a piece of fiction and passes it on to someone else who then takes it up with the same, trying to use the same voice and continue the story using their own imagination and then passing it on to someone else. I've seen stories like that that turned out to be great. Most of the time, after about three passes, it just takes a wild turn and you're thinking, you already had a narrative in your mind and you were determined to apply it to a pre-existing story.
And or it turns into something like Christopher Tolkien taking over for his father's work or something like that.
Yeah, which... we'll talk more about that in our next episode. Spoiler alert for you guys. All right, so we're wrapping this up. Go to fwthinking.com, join in on the conversation. We want to hear from you, and we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Ada. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, Centratech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.